And we got real serious and we thought to ourselves here a little bit about, how am I doing? Am I growing spiritually? Is my faith getting stronger? Am I busy in the Lord's work? And if we were just real honest about that, I wonder, how would we do? How would we come out on that evaluation? Lack of spiritual zeal is very often a byproduct of what's going on around us. And how much time we're spending doing some things that are not necessarily spiritually related. Now look, now I understand that as a Christian, you know, in one sense of the way of thinking about it, everything we do has a spiritual element to it. I understand that. But you know, if everything we're involved in is not really spiritually related, it's going to have an effect. And if we are not doing things that will draw us into a more spiritual relationship with God, it will have its effect. And so maybe the question has to turn around a little bit more and it becomes something more like, what is it that really fills our hearts? What is really most important to us? And then we start wondering about zeal and what we are lacking in zeal. And we compare that to what is in our hearts. I think we find answers, you know, when we do that. We will not grow spiritually if we are immersed in worldly endeavors. It just doesn't happen. It can't happen. And so we have to get real honest with ourselves. And when we start talking about zeal and trying to grow our faith and becoming more active in the Lord's work, well, we have to do just that. We have to become more active in the Lord's work. And so we're back to this idea of purifying our environment. So there's this passage on our page there, lesson number 5. The text is written right out there for us in the middle of the page from Zechariah. And I will bring the third part through fire, refine them as silver is refined, and test them as gold is tested. They will call on my name, and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people. And they will say, the Lord is my God. The Lord speaking about Israel. And the fact that there were tests, so to speak, that they would have to face. And we understand the analogy, we've touched on this before, the idea that precious metals are refined by fire. And if we are to be God's people, we need to prepare to be tested. We need to be prepared to be purified. That's what this lesson is about. Preparing ourselves to be purified, getting ready for whatever test will come our way so that we can come out of it, not weaker, but we come out of it stronger, refined. The Apostle Peter uses some of the same type of analogy in 1 Peter chapter 1, you might recall. We've touched on that before. That we are the ones who are refined with fire. Our faith growing greater, even because of the testing that we might have to face. Testing or refining is what purifies. And that'll make us the people of God. On our page here, number 25, on the right side of the page there where it says warming up, some thought questions here that kind of gets us started. You know, the most important environment you can purify is your heart. Well, here's Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. You know, what we do, what we say, how we act, how we respond to situations in life says so much about what's in our heart. I mean, that's not to say that we always make the right choices, we always make the right decisions, we always say the right things. Sometimes we do all of that wrong, but it still says something about our heart when we do something that's wrong and we say, I wish I didn't do that. or why did I say that? Because what's in our heart is really something different, but sometimes we get caught up in the moment. We are in a situation where we respond incorrectly, and it bothers us, and we are sorry, and we try to make things right. Because that's not really what's in our heart. What is in our heart is what springs forth. Jesus talked about what's in the heart is what's going to come out of the mouth, remember? It just makes us think a little, doesn't it? As we're sitting here, all of us, we're kind of doing this self-evaluation about, you know, how are we doing in our work in the kingdom? And am I zealous as I should be? And if we're thinking, you know, I need to be doing better, I'm not as zealous as I ought to be, we are doing a self-evaluation, aren't we? Trying to figure out, why not? What have I got to change in my life to get better about this? There's another passage in Matthew or in Luke chapter 6 where, you know, Jesus says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth what is evil, for out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks. We were just talking about that a moment ago. And so, this is why it's important for us to purify our hearts. This is an important part of the preparation of building zeal. If we don't have our heart right, nothing else is going to line up. If we don't have our heart right, even if we do the right things, it doesn't really matter. Because if our heart is wrong, we are out of step with God. And so we have to get some things right, get some things in order. And so we have to put some focus first on purifying the heart, removing the world. Well, each lesson has made some comments here about Peter and the Lord's relationship or reaction to Peter and some of the changes that Peter made as he became a disciple. You know, it even seems that with Peter, that when he started following the Lord, you know, there were some things about his life that had to change. There were some distractions in his life that had to be moved. Peter was, for a long time, a work in progress. I've seen some signs that sometimes a work in progress. I've been amazed for 35 years that Sandra hasn't found one of those signs and bought it and just put it over my desk. Work in progress. She's not referring to my desk. That's a work in progress too. But it would be a reference to me. Because for 35 years, I have been a work in progress for Sandra. And I think about Peter that way. You know, that he was a work in progress for the Lord. You know, he was, you think about his early years walking with the Lord, he still had a foot in the world. He still just did not get it. You know, all the way to the point of the betrayal, you know, it was Peter who pulled the sword, who was going to save the Lord from crucifixion. Peter, bless your heart. You still don't understand what has to happen here. Up to that point, he still didn't get it. And so, work in progress, we can see. Let's go to the book of John. A couple of passages here for us to look at. John chapter 17. You recall this disciple of prayer. Jesus is the one who's praying. An incredible chapter here of prayer. First, we're looking at the prayer for his disciples, John 17, and let's see, verse 11, we're going to begin with John 17, verse 11. Jesus prayed, "And now I am no longer in the world, but these are in the world, and I come to you. Holy Father, keep through your name those whom you have given me, that they may be one as we are one. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in your name. Those whom you gave me I kept, and none of them is lost except the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled. But now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not in the world of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. Verse 16, they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. As you have sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself, that they also may be sanctified by truth. Of the world and in the world. Do we see the distinction that the Lord is making? Yes, we live in the world, but we are not of the world. What a difference. Just a word. But it's a tremendous difference if that change in that world, in that word. And so the thought here with this lesson, again, is this idea of preparing ourselves to be purified. How are we going to do that? We're going to have to look at our environment and what is there in our lives that is just drawing us away from things that are spiritual. If we're honest, we probably find a lot of things. We're going to the Old Testament, to 2 Kings chapter 23. This is just a very interesting chapter to me. It's an incredible story of Josiah, a king who came to reign, who was a righteous king, who had a lot to change in Israel. Attitudes that had moved so far away from God. And he determined he would have to change, he would have to remove the things around Israel that were continually drawing them away from God. And so his purpose then was to try to purify their hearts. Well, Josiah, of course, could not control the hearts of men. But he could do something to control the environment in which Israel lived. This is a chapter that gives us in some incredible insight on what was going on in Israel. I mean, just how far removed from Jehovah God that they really were. And what they were doing, the worship that they had going on that had nothing to do with Jehovah God. In fact, they were doing exactly what God had expressly said not to do. That's pretty far away from God. In 2 Kings chapter 23 and verse 4, the king ordered Hilkiah, the high priest, the priests next in rank, and the doorkeepers to remove from the temple of the Lord all the articles made for Baal and Asherah and all the starry hosts. He burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of the Kidron Valley and took the ashes to Bethel. You know, you notice we're not talking about God's just being spread around Israel. We're at the temple. I mean, we're at the temple where these gods are at. And so, you know, we've talked about the Temple Mount. No, that was a different class. If you think about the Temple Mount, you know, and what would have been there, you know, and you try to imagine that it was there, the Temple Mount, around the temple, all of, you know, these foreign gods, these false gods. Josiah came in and had all those collected and taken out there on the east side of the city to the Kidron Valley and had them burned. Just burning them was not sufficient enough. He had the ashes picked up and taken to Bethel, far away. He didn't want even the ashes to be left close by. So we're getting a picture with that, just of how far removed from God these people had become. And so we understand something about the gods in the lives of Israel. Now we have to turn that around a little bit and start asking ourselves, what are the gods in our life? It's always so easy. And I've said this before. We talk about Israel, and how many times do we think, like, what was wrong with them? What were they thinking? How could they be doing this? God expressly said, you know, have no other gods before me. And we think, what's wrong with them? No, let's get personal. And we think about, what are the gods affecting our lives? Josiah here has made quite an example of what needs to happen to those influences. Stripped them out of the temple, took them out of the city, burned them, had the ashes carried away. Now we think about the influences that are maybe destroying our zeal. And what are we willing to do about them? Are we really willing to get rid of them? To carry them away? And we think about the stumbling blocks that we have in our lives. And if we are content to leave them in our lives, then we will never have the spiritual zeal that God wants us to have. Never. It will not happen. It cannot happen unless we get all of those removed from our lives. So, I've done a lot of preaching tonight, but we haven't had much discussion. I'm just curious what you're thinking. I'm just thinking, what's coming to your mind as we talk about some of these things? Examples you have. Changes you need to make.
Mm-hmm. You have to be single-eyed. You have to have a single eye.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, related to what you're actually focused on. And I thought of an illustration. Just make a good sermon, maybe. The idea of full immersion and or as opposed to sprinkling. I think one of the maybe wisdom of God, along with the figurative, you know, and symbolic elements of that immersion, relates to being hot, being completely immersed in the things of God and in the obedience to the Lord, as opposed to being sprinkled,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of just, you know,
yeah.
a little bit of.
The analogy is powerful.
You can have it.
I mean, that's the analogy there is powerful. I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't think about that. I mean, you can take it how many places? Are we sprinkled with faith? Maybe just a little bit? Are we immersed with it? You know, are we sprinkled in our diligence and our work for the Lord? Or are we immersed in it? You know, you see where we can go all over the place with this. In our zeal, we just sprinkle a little bit out there, or are we immersed in spiritual zeal?
Well, and I was thinking about who are we allowing to lead us from day to day? You know, if in our thinking, like it's really easy with as many screens as there are, you know, around in our lives and in our world, it's really easy to let screens lead your thinking as opposed to the Lord leading your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to get rid of all those screens that are leading into distractions so that you can remain single-eyed or single-focused.
Yeah.
Because it's just there's so many things that I mean, and they're not necessary. I'm not saying that all of it's bad, but you can get so sort of pulled into current events or what's happening over in, you know, Middle East or local news, all this stuff, you know, politics, all of this stuff can become a really
a diversion.
It divides your brain power in a way that it can easily start to distract your mind from what's actually really important.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the tyranny of the tyranny of the urgent or the
mm-hmm.
like the things that are that seem to be important right now. We have to deal with right now in some ways, but then, you know, there's a larger picture that we have to keep in our minds all the time, no matter what we're doing, whether we're at work or we're preparing mm-hmm. a meal or washing dishes or, you know, driving down the road or whatever. There's always a larger, big picture that we have to keep in our minds about what this is all about.
Right,
and
right.
That's the single eye. And mm-hmm. that's the focus on, you know, our position in the world as being led by the Spirit and not by the flesh. Being in the world, but not
out of the world. Right, right. Yeah, good thoughts. What else?
Tony and I now do two or three a week, call each other and do Bible study together on the phone, and that's how we climb it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The challenge that I think we all face and deal with as this life has become just so full of distractions, you know, it's harder to control our time. Our time is controlled for us. And with regard to that, many people are out of control with their time. And what I have seen in the last 20 years in particular, that this is just exploded, where people's time is sucked away. It's not that people aren't doing things. That's the problem. They're doing everything. You know, they're involved in everything. And what's most important gets left behind. That's what happens. Listen, Daryl.
Mm-hmm. What activity are we going to do, you know, this week? Like, it's always got to be
something,
you know. And I don't know if that is partly that we want to fill up our time, because, you know, and distract ourselves, because maybe our conscience is telling us we ought to be doing something more important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I see the same trend. Look at the next point here on page 26, looking at verse 5. Josiah did away with the pagan priests appointed by the kings of Judah to burn incense on the high places of the towns of Judah and on those around Jerusalem. Those who burned incense to Baal, to the sun and the moon, to the constellations, to all the starry hosts. He took the Asherah pole from the temple of the Lord to the Kidron Valley outside of Jerusalem and burned it there. He ground it to powder and scattered the dust over the graves of the common people. Kind of a continuation of what was happening here already. But he knows he also got rid of the people who were promoting sin. The priests, in this case, priests who were not supposed to be priests anyway. They'd been, you know, appointed by the previous kings. You know, there are a lot of people, even from a religious sense, that have influence in our lives. You know, friends that we have that are religious people, they may be good people, but from a religious standpoint, you know, are not walking by the same book we are. There's some other ideas. And just looking at just people as a whole who have influence on us, we start thinking about where we spend our time or with whom we spend our time and who has influence on us. And the fact is very simple that throughout time, we can see that when people who are not the people of God are they will have influence on the people who are trying to serve Him. And what are we going to do about that? And this is where we have to be careful. Where we have to be careful about who we choose as friends. I mean, we can't live in a hole. We live in the world. I mean, we can't go out of the world, you know, not until the end. You know, so we live in the world, but we have to be careful that we don't live of the world just because of the influences that come and affect us. Josiah went to those who were affecting the lives of so many people and took them away. He took them out of place and out of position is what he did. What about the places that affect us? Verse 7. He also tore down the quarters of the male shrine prostitutes, which were in the temple of the Lord and where women did weaving for Asherah. Josiah brought all the priests from the towns of Judah and desecrated the high places from Geba to Beersheba, where the priests had burned incense. He broke down the shrines at the gates, at the entrance of the gate of Josiah, the city governor, which is on the left of the city gate. Although the priests of the high places did not serve at the altar of the Lord at Jerusalem, they ate unleavened bread with their fellow priests. He desecrated Topheth, which was in the valley of Ben-Hinnom, so no one could use it to sacrifice his son or daughter in the fire to Molech. Are you kidding me? I mean, you think about some of these things that's going on. We're talking about in Jerusalem. These things were happening. And all the way from the north to the south of Israel, these things were happening. And so he was getting rid of the gods, the Asherah poles, the idols. He got rid of the pagan priests and the temples and the shrines. He removed the sexual temptations that were there, the prostitutes and the high places that were torn down for the people to the idea being for the people to leave their sins in the past. Remove these places where sins were being committed. And so, making it personal again, and what we're having to think about is what has to be removed from our lives. You know, what is it that starts controlling our lives over spiritual thoughts and spiritual activities? And sometimes we just have to choose to take certain things out of our lives because it's pulling us away. You know, there was, even in the notes here, there was in the book, there was something said about if you lose control of your temper at sporting events and kids' games. I saw a clip on the news today or yesterday. You saw, you know what I'm talking about. At a little kid's little league game, you know, these parents beating on each other, you know, because of some call the ump made. I'm going like, are you kidding me? I mean, getting so involved, so wrapped up in something like that, it becomes so all-important that you're going to start beating up on people. I hope they're all arrested and in jail. You know, this is crazy. But sometimes this is what happens when there are influences that just work on us and work on us and work on us, and we all have to get real honest with ourselves and start looking at what are the influences that is destroying our spirituality. And get rid of them. What are the gods? What are the people? Where are the places that is affecting our spirituality? And get them gone. That's what Josiah was trying to do. He's trying to do that for us. That does not of itself change the heart of the people. I get that. But Josiah was doing what he could do as king to remove those influences. Israel still had to make some choices. That's another story for another time, and it's not a pleasant one. But Josiah was doing what he could do. And in our lives, we have to do what we can do, what we can control. In the idea and the effort of trying to protect our heart and prepare our heart so that we can better serve God. Les mentioned a few minutes ago, I think it was Les, said something about, you know, if you know, can only watch so much political stuff on TV. I've got to, I can hardly watch any of it. I used to be kind of a news junkie 10 or 15 years ago. I want to know what was going on everywhere all the time. I've got over that. You know, it's all I can do to control my own issues and problems, you know. I'd like to know if somebody's like getting ready to drop a missile on us, I guess, but beyond that, I can't control too much of that. And it just gets me upset. And it distracts me from the things that I need to be doing. So I really don't watch much of that. You know, I can bop online for 2 minutes and I can read the headlines. I know all I want to know. I mean, if you can handle more than that, good for you. I can't. I mean, that's a change in the last 10 years I've had to make, you know, and which was about as dramatic as parking the race car, you know, for me. And so sometimes you just have to figure out what are those challenges you're dealing with and do something with that. Other thoughts, comments?
Verse 7 was particularly striking to me in this 2 Kings 20.
Mm-hmm.
My version says, then he tore down the ritual booths of the perverted persons that were in the house of the Lord where the women were. Wove hangings for the wooden images. And then the footnote, which what version were you
using? NIV.
NIV was actually a little more explicit than this, but the it mentions the Hebrew word here, and it says those practicing sodomy and prostitution.
This says male prostitutes is what this says.
Mm-hmm. So what I was thinking about was, and among all these other things, like what were the, I've heard this sequence of sort of entrance into these deep sins to be sort of like this. At first, a culture tolerates something. And then after it tolerates something, it becomes somewhat accepting of something that this practice is among in their culture. And then after there's an acceptance of something, there's actually an embracing and a celebration of that thing. How, you know, what were the steps?
Right.
Over a period of
years, yeah.
From the time of the glory years of Israel, you know, David and the earlier years of Solomon, that then led the children of Israel to bring in these idols in the temple to Baal. And to having male prostitutes.
You can't imagine it started like that.
I mean, what is the process?
Right.
And what I was going to say was that's the kind of thing that we need to keep in our minds, because we do not want to have a taste for worldly intrusion, because it can have the same sort of
effect.
Tornado whirlwind effect of pulling us down into things that we should have absolutely no relationship whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I was growing up in Michigan, I was a teenager. There were several teens at church at the period of time I was there growing up. And of which about the 10 or 12 teens in my age group when I was there. It was about the biggest teen group there ever was. I think there's only two of us that we could probably count as faithful to the Lord out of that whole group, which is just really, really sad. But I remember this one family who had a daughter about my age and a son that was a little bit younger that bought a lake cottage about 70 miles or so away. I mean, in Michigan, that was a big thing. I mean, the roads leading out of town on Friday nights were jam-packed. On Sunday nights, they were jam-packed, everybody coming back in. It was going to the lakes, you know, for the weekend, 10,000 lakes in Michigan. They wanted a little cottage on the lake, and they bought a cottage on the lake. And remember when I started off, there was some concern because they were gone about, you know, in the summertime, they're gone about, you know, a weekend every month. They would be gone. There was no church that anybody knew of, you know, in that area. They were just gone for the weekend. Second year, they'd be gone, you know, twice a month, it seems like, you know. And by the third year, sometimes we wouldn't see them for 3 weeks in a row. They'd be going to the lake, you know, invited other Christians to go. Sometimes other Christians went too, you know. Most of the time, others just spent Saturday and came home. The point with that is those kids that were about my age never became Christians. You know, they never expressed much interest in the Lord. And anything I've been able to hear or find out about them in life as they got into their 20s and all were pretty worldly. Their parents, I remember hearing their parents say later as I was getting older, and I remember him saying, "I messed up. I really messed up with my children. And I took my eye off the ball, and I destroyed any hope of faith for my children." And there was a regret. What is it that destroys our spiritual zeal? There's a lot of things. I mean, there's so many things we can find and see. What are we going to do about it? And what are we going to do to try to build spiritual zeal? Good thoughts for us to work through this. I appreciate your comments tonight.